There we go. You know, I had to laugh a couple of times while I was putting this message together. I was remembering back 38 years ago. 38 years ago was when my wife and I first came into God's church. We had just been baptized during the fall holy days at that time in 1986. And we went through Pentecost. We went through trumpets. And then we came to atonement. And I asked my wife just this last week, and she agreed. This was the first time. That was the first time she or I had ever fasted in her life. We didn't know what fasting was. You know, we knew what the definition was. Yeah, you don't eat, you don't drink, you know. You starve yourself for a time, and that's fasting, right? Interesting. Well, it kind of got thought about the Day of Atonement. This is God's way of getting us to fast at least one time during the year. And, you know, since then, I've learned a few lessons. So today is a day of fasting. So what's the difference between today, the Day of Atonement, and any other fast we might be involved in? Now there, based on my count, there's three specific fasts listed in the Bible. Now, there's the Day of Atonement, which is a commanded fast, as we all know. Now, I don't know about you, but I know for myself, we couldn't come up with a number, but my wife and I, we've fasted for the church. The church has asked us to fast periodically for things that that we're praying for. You know, we want answers for prayers. So we fast as a group, as a church, as a community. And then there's those personal fasts you and I have with God. And they're the ones that between exactly that, you and God, me and God. No one else need know. And there's some big differences in all three types of fasting. Now, what is fasting? So if you want to know what something is, where do you go? Wikipedia, of course. Fasting, okay, this is from Wikipedia. Fasting is primarily an act of willing abstinence or reduction from certain or all food, drink, or both for a period of time. An absolute fast is normally defined as abstinence from all food and liquid for a defined period, usually a 24-hour period or a number of days. Now, I don't know about you, but that definition of fasting falls way short. Where in that definition did it mention God? Nowhere. This is the world's idea of fasting. And brethren, as God's people, fasting teaches all of us many lessons. But we can also see God's hand at work whenever we fast with the right heart, whenever we are doing it the proper way. And God shows us clearly in the Bible that there's a right way and a wrong way to fast. You know, we see fasting listed throughout the Bible. Good forms of fasting and not so good forms of fasting. Fasting for, look at me, you know, sackcloth and ashes, sitting on the street corners, praying and chanting and knowing that people are looking at you. And God says something about them. Sometimes we fast as a church, as a community, for a certain problem or whatever the case may be. And that, again, that's the kind of fast we do together. You know, it's not necessarily a private fast. Now, is it a commanded fast? No, it's not. And I know when the church has asked the brethren to fast in the past, that rhymes, that some people just can't do it. You know, there are things. Life sometimes gets in the way of your ability to fast, our ability to fast. Today, brethren, we're going to look at, see what the Bible says about fasting, how we should conduct ourselves when we do fast. We're also going to see the differences between that personal fast, that collective fast, and today, God's feast. God's feast, God's Day of Atonement that he set aside for us. You know, today is about self-control. It's about discipline. It takes discipline to say no to your body. It really does. I know I'm not the only one standing up here. Oh, I'm the only one standing up here. You guys are sitting here listening to your bellies roll. At least mine was a minute ago. And my lips are kind of dry. You know, it's about self-control. But, you know, one of the other things, even today is a commanded fast. It's voluntary. You and I volunteered for this. We agreed to this, right? When we said yes, when we became baptized members into the Church of God, we agreed to follow God's commandments and his holy days. We know clearly what God's holy days are. As a matter of fact, let's turn over. I've already turned there to Leviticus, and we're going to spend a little bit of time here. Leviticus 23, and we're going to start in verse 1. Leviticus 23 and verse 1. Okay, I thought I was here a couple pages off. Leviticus 23 and verse 1. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, the feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be a holy convocation." That's what we're doing here. We're having a holy convocation. We're joining together as God's people. That's what it's about. "The feasts of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations." Now listen to this. "These are my feasts." Not the Jewish feasts, not the Old Testament feasts. These are God's feasts. And we all know that the regular Sabbath, now this is a Sabbath day, but this is a very high Sabbath. This falls on a holy day. Now let's drop down to verse 26, because we're going to zero in on the Day of Atonement. Verse 26. "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, also the 10th day of this 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. It shall be a holy convocation for you. You shall afflict your souls and offer an offering made by fire to the Lord." Now, we're going to take up an offering later, but we're afflicting our souls. We are joining together as members of God's family today. We're doing what God commanded us to do. Now, in verse 28, "And you shall do no work on that same day, for it is the Day of Atonement, to make atonement for you before the Lord your God." We're not done yet. Verse 29. "For any person who is not afflicted in his soul on that same day shall be cut off from his people." And verse 30. "And any person who does any work on that same day, that person I will destroy from among his people." Think about that. How important is the Day of Atonement to God? I mean, he warns us right there many times, several times. This is what you're going to do. This is how you observe this day. Verse 31, "You shall do no manner of work." None. Nothing. I know for my wife and I, we didn't even make our bed this morning. And kind of telling on my wife a little bit, but we don't do any form of work, nothing servile whatsoever. "You shall do no manner of work, for it shall be a statute forever throughout your generations and all of your dwellings. It shall be a Sabbath of solemn rest, and you shall afflict your souls on the 9th day of the month at evening. From evening to evening you shall celebrate." Now we're just not here joining together. We're afflicting our souls, and we're celebrating doing that. We're celebrating this Sabbath. It's God's Sabbath. Sabbath he set aside for all of us. Now, I've noticed I've got quite a few pages of notes here, and I'm not going to be reading all of them. But I do actually want to do one thing. I want to refer to one of the church booklets. Let's see if I've got it here. God's Holy Day Plan. Because God's Holy Day Plan, and it's funny, a long time ago when I first started speaking, John Elliott was my mentor. He said, if you can't come up with anything to speak on, look at the church literature and see what it says. Wow, what a concept. So I find that they can actually say things a lot clearer than I can. So let me go ahead and read this. And this is from God's Holy Day Plan. And it's, how do we keep this day as a church, as an organization? What do we do on this day? Now, notice specific instructions on how and when we are to keep this day, this festival. Also, the 10th day of the 7th month, and we just read that in Leviticus 23:27, says, how do you afflict your soul? How do you afflict? What does that mean? What does afflict mean? Well, afflict comes from the Hebrew anah, A-N-A-H, right? That word means to be afflicted, be bowed down, be humbled, or to be meek. Now, Vine's Complete Expository Dictionary of the Old Testament words, to be humbled, to be afflicted. The same word is used in connection with fasting in Psalms 35:13 and Isaiah 58:3 and Isaiah 58:5. Also in Ezra, and we're going to read that here in a few minutes, in Ezra 8:21. Fasting means to abstain from all food or drink. Wait a minute. Okay, so now we're starting to get into a much better definition of what fasting is. We're reading it right here. Fasting expresses our humble desire on this day to grow closer to God. The Day of Atonement represents a coming time of reconciliation when Satan banished and the world having been devastated by the horrific events leading up to this time, a humbled and repentant humanity will at last be reconciled to God. Now, listen to this, and this is why I chose this particular area. Few will understand. I didn't understand it. When I first came into the church, I did not understand the difference between atonement, the difference between fasting on a regular day or when the church... What is the difference, and what is the reason for fasting? Why do we do it, huh? Excuse me. Now, few understand the proper reason for fasting. Fasting is not to bend God to our will. We don't fast to receive anything at all. We don't fast to receive anything. Fasting helps us remember how temporary our physical existence is. Now, when it comes to personal fasting, now this is what I really want to talk about today. The Day of Atonement, we're here because we are told to be here. We're doing what God tells us to do. Nowhere in the Bible does God tell us to fast. No. Nowhere does it. When you pray, it says you're not being commanded. This is all voluntary. I want you to think about this a little bit. To serve, to give, to pray, to fast, these are voluntary actions. Today is the only day God commanded his people to fast. It's all voluntary, the rest of it. Now, how much of a servant mind do you have? How often do you pray? How often do you fast? When do you give? How often do you serve? Now, when it comes to a personal fast, is there any particular day that's set aside? Now, I want to read actually from another church booklet, because if you can't come up with the words yourself, they say it better than I do. Now, in Romans 14, verses 5 and 6, Paul wrote, one person esteems one day above another. Another esteems every day alike. Let each be fully convinced in his own mind. He who observes the day observes it to the Lord, and he who does not observe the day, to the Lord he does not observe it. Now, a lot of people think this is talking about the Sabbath. Which day do we worship, Saturday or Sunday? This is where they argue it. It's not what it's talking about. Continuing in the booklet, Paul was writing to a congregation composed of both Jewish and Gentile believers in Rome. You can find that in Romans 1, verse 13, and Romans 2, verse 17. Eating and fasting practices that were not clearly addressed in the scriptures had become a point of contention. And for me, it was kind of confusing when I read the scriptures regarding fasting. I didn't really understand what it meant. And the same thing was true from a long time ago. Now, listen to this. The Talmud records that many Jews of that time fasted on Mondays and Thursdays. Mondays and Thursdays. Twice a week. Okay, today is hard enough, right? You know, I mean, and I personally, I'm going to just tell myself, I've got a plan and prepare for a feast or a fast. It's not one of those things I do spontaneously. Yeah, I just think I'm going to go ahead and fast. No, I plan for it. What particular day and what am I going to be doing that day? Because I know I'm going to be a little worn out. What day do I do it? When the day is right. Now, the Talmud records that many Jews of that time fasted Mondays and Thursdays. They also had other traditional fast days. And you can read Zechariah 7, verses 3 through 5 to see that. Since some of the Jewish Christians in Rome self-righteously criticized others, perhaps they had become like the Pharisees who boasted, "I fast twice a week." Wow, I'll tell you right now, brethren, if the church required us to fast twice a week, I think I would be speaking to a bunch of chairs out there right now. I don't think anybody's going to stick around for that, do you? So, possibly members of the church at Rome were trying to enforce fasting on particular days on other Christians, on other Christians there, prompting Paul's pointed question, "Who are you to judge another's servant?" Paul appeared to be setting the record straight, emphasizing that fasting is a voluntary exercise of worship, not limited to a particular day. Therefore, one person's fasting on a particular day when another person's eating does not make him more or less righteous. Think about that. And it's been a contention throughout the ages. When do you fast? How often do you fast? Oh, you don't fast? This is not required. This is something when we fast. Now, we're going to get into something else here in just a moment, but I want to read actually another article. Oops. And this is just a quick paragraph. And this is from the Bible.org. Bible.org. Fasting is feasting. Fasting, like prayer and giving, is a legitimate spiritual discipline to be practiced in private between a Christian and the Lord. How often we practice it is not prescribed. How often we do it is not prescribed. Now, if you want to really get God's attention, we fast. We fast. Think about that. And there's things we shouldn't do when we do fast. Now, First Corinthians 7. I want to read this real quick. This kind of sums up what we were just talking about. 1 Corinthians 7 and verse 5. "Do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer, and come together again so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." Wait a minute. Okay, so it's telling us why we fast. Fasting strengthens our self-control. We're able to stand up against Satan when we have self-control, when we're not tempted by Satan. You know, just like fasting, just like prayer, it's voluntary. And anytime we neglect either one of those, we jeopardize a relationship with God. Now, in Matthew 6, verses 16 through 18, it tells us what we shouldn't be doing. Here's what we shouldn't be doing. The ways we shouldn't react when we fast. Matthew 6, verse 16. "Moreover, when you fast, do not be like the hypocrites with a sad countenance, for they disfigure their faces that they may appear to men to be fasting. Assuredly, I say to you, they have their reward." Wow. Never do that. Verse 18, "so that you do not appear..." Wait, let's go back up one more time. "But you, when you..." Verse 17, "but when you fast, anoint your head and wash your face, so that you do not appear to be fasting, but to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly." This is talking about not the Day of Atonement. It's talking about that personal fast. It's talking about when we go and say, "God, I need your help." And we're not asking for anything. We're just looking for God to show us that he is there. That's really it. Now, we're going to go on to another area. In fact, before we move on, there's few, if any, examples of fasting that are more exciting than Moses and his 40 days with God. And Jesus Christ, when he went into the wilderness, his 40 days. Can you imagine? We're going to do this from sunset last night till sunset tonight. Now, my family has a very long-lasting tradition where we take a glass of chocolate milk and ice cold. We make this beforehand. We make sure this, I mean, this is just so cold, and this is how we break the fast on atonement. And you have no idea how good that chocolate milk feels. You can feel it go down all the way and hit. And I'll tell you what, it's something we've done it for years and years and years. And tonight I'm looking forward to my chocolate milk. You know, the Bible also shows us that it's more important to obey God and obey his commandments than it is to fast. Now, I'm not going to read it, but obedience is better than fasting. It's in Zechariah 7, verses 1 through 7. Now, I am going to read about a community fast, and this is what a church might fast for. And this is in the book of Ezra. And in Ezra 8, I said we were going to turn there. Ezra 8. And I'm going to start reading verse 21. Ezra 8, verse 21. I proclaimed a fast there at the river Ahava, that we might humble ourselves before our God, to seek from him the right way for us and our little ones and all of our possessions. Now, this is why they are fasting. For God to show them the right way. What should we do? They're praying for protection. Now, I'm just going to drop down to verse 23 real quick. So we fasted and entreated our God for this, and he answered our prayer. Sometimes we have to fast before our prayers are answered. And this is an example. But this is also an example of a community fast. As people. Now, you can also find another example of that, Nineveh, and you know, the story of Jonah, as you know. Jonah 3, verses 3 through 9, talks about what Nineveh did, and they fasted. They fasted. Now, the way they fasted back then somewhat was a spectacle, even when they did it as a community. They covered themselves in sackcloth and ashes, and they fasted, and they abstained from all food and drink, okay? So fasting is often about repenting or asking for correction. You know, we need to know that God is there. We have to rely on God. Think about it. If we went 2 days, 3 days, I know I'd never make that 40 days, but eventually we're going to get to the point where we can't stand up. If we don't eat, we will die. If we don't drink, we will die. God is the only strength that we have, and he wants us to use these tools. Now, as I begin to conclude here, let's look at the fasting that pleases God. And that's really what we're talking about here, fasting that pleases God. And I always said I was going to do this. Okay, I'm good. I want to make sure I'm not taking too much time away from you, Dale. Now, you can read Zechariah 7, verses 5 through 10, but we're not going to do that. We're going to go over to Isaiah 58, and this will be the last scripture we turn to. Isaiah 58, and we're going to read a few scriptures here because it's very important. Isaiah 58, starting in verse 6. Is this not a fast that I have chosen? To loose the bonds of the wicked, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry, and that you bring to your house the poor who are cast out? When you see the naked, that you cover him, and not hide yourself from your own flesh. Verse 8, and any time it starts with the word then or therefore, I always take notice because Verse 8 says, "Then your light shall break forth like the morning. Your healing shall spring forth speedily, and your righteousness shall go before you. The glory of the Lord shall be your right guard," or your rear guard, excuse me. And verse 9 starts off again. "Then you shall call, and the Lord will answer. You shall cry, and he will say, 'Here I am, here I am.' If you take away the yoke from your midst, the pointing of fingers and speaking wickedness, if you extend your soul to the hungry and satisfy the afflicted soul, then your light shall dawn in the darkness, and your darkness shall be as noonday." How does that happen, brethren? It's a result of doing God's will, to living by his commandments, by fasting regularly, not just, oh, on the Day of Atonement. Hopefully this isn't the only day this year everyone out here has fasted. I won't say how many times I fasted this year, but I can assure you this wasn't the only day. I know I need to do it more. I need to pray more. I need to give more. I need to serve more. So as we conclude, let's go ahead and review the differences between the Day of Atonement and any other fast we might do. Number one, the Day of Atonement is a feast day that is set aside by God. Number two, the Day of Atonement is a collective fast that we all of us participate in. I know you're fasting. I know you're fasting. I know everyone out there is fasting. You know I'm fasting. The Day of Atonement is a set period of time from sunset to sunset on a specific day. The Day of Atonement pictures our high priest, Jesus Christ, making atonement for the sins of all mankind. Wow, there's examples in this day. The Day of Atonement points to the time when Satan the devil will be bound for a 1,000 years. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm really looking forward to that time. The Day of Atonement, on the Day of Atonement, we draw closer to God. And we picture the reconciliation. We just sang a hymn talking about the reconciliation between God the Father and all of us, the whole world. That's what I'm looking forward to. And most importantly, the Day of Atonement is a statute forever throughout your generations, in all your dwellings. So let's look forward to the time, brethren, when we don't need to fast, when we're spirit beings in the millennium, and we've got the feast that we're looking forward to here in just a few days. I don't know about you. I'm a little nervous about it, a little excited about it, but it's an opportunity to practice what we've learned all year long, to be God's people, to be humble, to be meek, to be that polite person when no one else is. You know, this is who we're supposed to be, brethren. So let's continue to work towards that goal, to be part of the family of God.